Soccer Velo. This is FieldPod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Tbilisi's bright and toasty Rustaveli Avenue, the week in Georgia in English. Today is Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2013. On this date, in 1536, Anne Boleyn, Queen of England, is arrested and imprisoned on charges of adultery, incest, treason, and witchcraft because of Will Dunbar, who is English. In 1611, King James Bible is published for the first time in London. He didn't have anything to do with that. In 1670, Charles II of England grants a permanent charter to the Hudson Bay Company to open up the fur trade in North America so that Will Dunbar's compatriots could oppress Canada. In 1808, the people of Madrid rise up in rebellion against French against French occupation. In 1885, the Congo Free State is established by King Leopold II of Belgium. In 1945, Berlin falls to the Soviet troops, and a Georgian guy hoists the red flag over the Reichstag building.
Allegedly.
He's wearing three watches, I think. In 1952, the world's first ever jet airliner, the de Havilland Comet 1, makes its maiden flight from London to Johannesburg. In 1982, a British nuclear sub seeks the Argentine cruiser General Belgrano. 1998, the European Central Bank is founded in Brussels. 2000, President Bill Clinton announces that accurate GPS access would no longer be restricted to the United States military. And 2 years ago today, Osama bin Laden is whacked by SEALs. Birthdays today are Catherine the Great, Engelbert Humperdinck, Leslie Gore, The Rock, and David Beckham. We are Matthias Hooter, Will Dunbar, and me, Mark Mullen. Later, we will have two guests who are students from the State Medical University in São Bartolo, Alicia Wallace and Drishi Rajguru. Thanks again for those posting on our forum. Comments, viewpoints, opinions, anything else you want at tbilpod.com or send us an email at tbilpod@gmail.com. As stated, we'll be interviewing ministers, so keep those questions coming. Now's your chance. Great one from Simon and plenty of others. I have a feeling that next up is going to be Archil Gegeshidze, who, of course, isn't a minister, but will be Georgia's ambassador to the United States. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Palitra column this week is about police in Georgia and how the patrol police should start addressing traffic infractions, since they spend so much time in their cars, but mainly they should get out of their cars, and if they're in their cars, they should certainly stop using those annoying Soviet-style loudspeakers to yell at people. On Saturday, midterm elections were held in three constituencies vacated by people who became ministers, Nazala Devi Samtredi and Baghdati. According to preliminary results, Otsneva's candidates won in all three districts. In Nazala Devi, Tamas Kordzaya, who headed Gaila's Media Legal Defense Center, received 39% of the vote. Kaja Kukava of the Free Georgia Party got 17%, and UNM's candidate Mirza Davitaya got 15%. In Baghdati, Panta Kiknavelidze, a corporate lawyer who since 1999 has practiced commercial law, was Otsneva's candidate and received 62% of the vote. UNM candidate Vladimir Tskhoridze got 21%. In Samtredi, Otsneva's candidate Georgi Kachiani received 81% of the vote. Kachiani is a lawyer who was the assistant to the deputy chairman of the Supreme Court in 2002-04, and worked as an advisor at the Constitutional Court from 2005-07. UNM's Emzar Shubladze received 19%.
All the UNM candidates there received significantly more than the poll ratings in the NDI poll last week would have indicated.
Yeah.
Which was 10%. So, I mean, I think the UNM, except for coming third in Tbilisi, but then Tbilisi's already always been more anti-UNM, especially to a guy like Kaja Kukava. But still, I mean, I think they can be relatively happy with that, probably.
I mean, you think with strong candidates or just...
Strong candidates, good. I mean, who knows? I don't know, but...
Yeah. But, Kordzaya, with 39% of the vote, winning that seat, you see the problem that we've been talking about during the actual parliamentary elections in October, that... there's no runoff if one candidate makes more than 30%. I mean, 39% and splitting the vote among, I think, like four or five strong candidates, that's...
Which is a really horrible, dangerous thing to do, and they should move the threshold back to 50%. And considering that they've been looking at amending the election law, it's really too bad
But now that we have a sort of more genuine party system, and you don't have this super dominant thing anymore and a fragmented opposition, then actually maybe the threshold's not such a big issue anymore.
No, hang on, you're wrong. It should be 50% because like people should not be able to win a parliamentary seat with
losing
60% of the vote. In UK, and look what a mess you people are in. You know, I mean, it should be. There should be 50%.
I mean, the point
exactly
is
as it is in the French presidential election, and
well, the French presidential election is a directly elected presidential election from a nationwide ballot. In the US and the UK, in the US there's only two parties, admittedly, but this is standard practice all over the world. This used to be an important thing when there was a single super dominant party of power and a fragmented and weak opposition. That's no longer the case.
Why do you hate democracy, Will? That's my question. You know, I mean, it's like the 50% threshold is really important because there should majoritarian members of parliament should have legitimacy, and legitimacy that can only be conferred by getting 51% of the vote. You know, I mean, it's not that big a deal to register, to have an election where you've got, you know, something like 15, 20, 25,000 voters in some of these places. I mean, yeah, okay, not so
I don't bigger, think the 50% threshold is that big a deal either. And I think it used to be, I don't think it is anymore. And I think perhaps political capital should be expended on other things.
I think perhaps you should spend your time talking about things like the May Day demonstrations that happened yesterday that you know more about. So, like, what was the deal? It was a labor law, labor code?
It was a bunch of students, you know, left-wing student groups who just, you know, had a small-ish demonstration. I've been no more than 1,000 people, and marched around the city, and they sort of shouted some slogans and graffitied some buildings, which I disapprove of, but whatever.
Particularly spicy graffiti? Or
oh, you know, the TBC Bank headquarters, like some sort of anti-capitalist stuff. And
are you
then,
kidding me? That's such a beautiful building.
They can wipe it off, it's fine. But and then at the Georgian Manganese place as well. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not into the graffiti stuff, and I think in the UK you probably would have been arrested for graffitiing buildings like that, but, what, you know, that's beside the point. Then they got to Rustaveli Avenue, into the sort of narrow bit by the Academy of Sciences, and they spilled out onto the streets, and the police tried to sort of get them back on the pavement, but there wasn't really enough room or something. I wasn't there. And then some scuffles broke out, and
I mean, my question is, you know, it's like so
journalists got arrested.
Laboratory 1918, you know, which is like somehow connected with Guido Giorgioliani, the member of parliament who, you know, if I remember correctly, in the late 80s, spent a lot of time going around to, you know, non-Soviet countries with tourists escorting them, you know. So what, you know, I don't know, what who, like, you know, who's they, doing all of this for what?
I mean, they have been, like, I think seen for the past couple of years as the only kind of non-partisan student group. They were also the ones who immediately organized the protests when the torture videos came out.
That's right, yeah, they did the drag runs that worked there. They had some great signs, I remember, that
and they claimed yesterday that they started getting arrested when people started calling for the Interior Ministry's resignation. And there's a 12-minute video uploaded by a Liberale journalist who I think was subsequently detained. And it does show some, but the police being sort of, you know, over the top and aggressive, you know, putting these little kids around, yeah. And
but not in riot gear or something. They were
riot,
normal,
I mean,
street.
This was not a blood on the streets moment. Yeah. It was just another little bit of unpleasantness. And the first bit of unpleasantness that the new and rebranded Georgian police have been involved with, really. And certainly, they were much more heavy-handed yesterday with a much more peaceable crowd than they were outside the National Library with a much more aggressive crowd when Misha tried to give his address. So I think that tells you something about priorities.
I think the solution would be more female police officers in cases like that.
And just better training police. I mean, yes,
better training.
Yeah, that's a very, very good idea. So, you know, Karabashvili, take note. The government is reinvestigating the unsolved killing of Freddie Woodruff, a CIA officer who was shot in 1993 while riding in the back of a car in Tbilisi. Justice Minister Ted Tsiloukiani said that the case wasn't properly investigated. The suspect in the case, Anzor Shanamanidze, was swiftly convicted of murder and sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was quietly released from jail in 2008 after witnesses recanted their testimony and said they'd been tortured into implicating him. Killing took place soon after a visit to Tbilisi by well-known double agent Aldrich Ames. There's a New York Times article about this, which has people talking.
They didn't actually say that, just to clarify, they're not reinvestigating. They say they would like to reinvestigate. And whether this is a serious thing or whether this is just a throwaway remark of Tsiloukiani, who, let's face it, she's great in other things, but she does make a lot of throwaway remarks, remains to be seen. So,
all right. On Tuesday, UNM Member of Parliament Guy Abaramidze announced he's considering running in the UNM primary election, which would indicate that there will be one, to be the presidential candidate.
He then said, I haven't made my final decision yet, though.
Okay.
And Giga Bakaria said he definitely won't be running in the primaries.
Wise. Swell guy, but, you know, okay. On Tuesday, public defender Uche Nanuashvili stated that the Chechens who survived the Lapankuri operation left Georgia and are now in Europe and Syria. He said that with the help of several embassies, the Minister of Foreign Affairs granted them Georgian citizenship. This is messed up, you know, that, first of all, I don't know whether he knows that, but if he does, he should name his sources.
Also, why would you need foreign embassies to help grant people Jordan citizenship?
Exactly, which is what he
says.
And
then go to fight in Syria.
Right.
Like yeah, that. And then, you know, and then that they left. And I mean, it's just, you know, like, it's really good to have an ombud person who can, you know, talk about human rights abuses at home, but those who can involve themselves in sort of political conspiracies of this nature are unhealthy. And saying, you know, foreign governments, you know, that somehow assisted in this process. I mean, it's one thing if you're going to charge the former government of having assisted Chechens of moving in and out of Pankisi, but it's another thing to say, you know, something like this without being specific.
Well,
he
essentially alleged that Georgia is training terrorists, or Georgia had been training terrorists, and this is what you get, I think, when instead of appointing the candidate that the whole broad range of Georgian civil society wanted for the ombudsman, you appoint some guy that was in charge of a fairly marginal and fairly, you know, radical so-called human rights NGO. So, I mean...
Exactly right. I mean, Tamar Gurjiani was the person that everybody agreed would be very good at that job, and then all of a sudden, you know...
And who knows, maybe he's right, maybe he's absolutely right, but the way he's approaching, I don't think he is, but the way he's approaching this demonstrates a certain degree of irresponsibility that you don't really want from someone that's in charge of defending the whole human rights of the entire population of Georgia.
Indeed. Government has decided to give a building to the city of Batumi to be used as its city hall. Misha built the building to house the Batumi Technological University that was going to be part of a big Millennium Challenge project. Dr. Normania, the Minister of Regional Development, said the decision is not yet final. However, he took it upon himself to comment on the building architecturally. Quote, from an architectural point of view, it is a very strange building because there is a rectangle inside of it. Besides, it's a narrow building, which is a little useless with respect to creating a university or things like that, end quote. Misha disagreed.
Well, Mark Benashvili, the education minister, went further, calling it an odious building.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I have to admit that, especially with the Millennium Challenge Project, that like there were a lot of universities that were being told by previous education minister Shashkin that you need to put your university here, and they were sort of looking at it, thinking, how are we... And not even the whole building, but just were part of it, thinking, how is that going to...
It's a sort of narrow skyscraper. It's a sort of...
On the beach somebody was, you know, persuaded to build and they didn't really know what to do.
And isn't there the Rustavi 2 studio on top of it or something
very
like that?
Very probably, I don't know.
Anyway, Misha disagreed and said that BI should review the decision. UNM published its conceptual plan for employment. It consists of four major points, reduction in taxes, including reduction in taxes. First, the UNM believes that the government should improve the country's poor economic conditions and its high level of unemployment. Second, jobs ought to be created by business. Third, employment growth is impossible without attracting foreign investment. And fourth, opening new export markets will give strong incentives to the job creation process.
Well, that is detailed and results-oriented.
Right. Exactly, results-oriented, and that's what we're all about. Newspaper Versia is trying to find out who the official owner of the presidential residence in Ablabadi is. According to an undisclosed source, it was registered under a private person's name after the October elections. Public Registry responded that information concerning governmental residences and buildings is confidential. The newspaper revealed that the Ablabadi residence belonged to LLC State Provision, but registration of this LLC was concealed on December 24, 2012. The new institution which officially owns the residence is unknown.
I think that just shows the incompetence of Versia, because that kind of information you can find online. It's a free database that anybody can log into, and you see the land registry, especially in Tbilisi, that's really good. You can see who owns every piece of land. You get the ownership record and all that. You see if there are bank loans on that property.
Why do you hate free media?
We hate crappy media. Do we know who owns the presidential residence then?
I haven't looked it up, but you can look up who owns Bidzina's residence.
Who owns Bidzina's residence?
A Georgian company that is owned by an offshore company.
What about that?
Yeah,
funny how that works. On Monday, Shoto Murgulia, Deputy Minister of Regional Development, stated that the majority of governors are not cooperating and are trying to sabotage the ministry. The petulant deputy minister said that the governors have not been communicating with the ministry since the March disaster when more than 10 municipalities were damaged. During the last 6 months, the governors have addressed the ministry only 10 times. Chairman of the Parliament, Datu Zubashvili, said that the government is ready to implement BI's initiative and stop the prosecution of former government officials. Zubashvili said that this ending of legal prosecution will not apply to those who've committed grave crimes or those involved in, quote, scandalous cases. Since, you know, Georgia's strong civil code regulations against scandalousness. Earlier, BI stated he and his team were ready to stop the arrest of former high-ranking government officials as soon as possible. He stated to journalists, quote, as for individuals who might have been the victims of the system themselves, in other words, the executioners, we would like to state that we are ready to pardon them, end quote.
Well, that's very magnanimous.
Very magnanimous.
It feels weird if politicians say stuff like that. Isn't that something that courts should be involved in?
Well, I mean, courts should be involved in the final say. I guess it's a political decision to decide.
After the politicians tell the courts, you know, what they're supposed to do. I mean, that was a joke to PeelPod listeners. Sorry. On Tuesday, Georgian Dream activists broke into the UNM Member of Parliament's Dato Chavchanidze's Khoni office and burned a portrait of Misha. They were demanding that the former members of the UNM leave the building they're working in.
So this is great, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you can just cast your mind back a few years to like 2009 when there were the opposition protests and you had nasty things happening to opposition activists in the regions and apologists for the national movement, apologists for Misha's government would say, oh, well, you know, we can't possibly control everything that happens with our with the police, for instance, in these little villages. You know, we don't really have control.
Decentralized, neoliberal.
And now we're having exactly the same thing. So you've got a bunch of violent thugs breaking into the offices of people they don't like and burning things, admittedly burning very silly things. This could be shut down tomorrow by the central government if they so chose. And the fact that they're not so choosing to do so is a bad sign, and they really ought to get a handle on their local guys.
Indeed they should. It's sending a message to all the other local thugs that have not yet burned a portrait of the president. On Georgia's Independence Day, May 26th, there'll be events across Georgia. The national government will be funding events in 25 cities across the country. Three locations in Tbilisi will have festivities, Rustavelli Avenue, Guldani Central District, and Farkatili. BI set a special commission headed by Vice Prime Minister and Education Minister Georgi Margvelashvili, which is working on organizational issues. On a related note, Misha called the government's decision to refuse to hold a military parade unacceptable. He said, quote, replacing the parade on May 26th with other events is not acceptable because the armed forces are a key indicator of our independence, end quote.
So you shut me down when I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but that was totally unfair. Because
I didn't shut you down.
Yeah, you did.
I just told you you're wrong.
Well, I'm not wrong, because if you look at what the people like Maya Panjikadze and stuff have said about this, my point was that the reason they're not holding a military parade was because they wanted to thumb their noses at Misha, and that has now been proved true.
Misha feels that his nose has been thumbed.
He is the president of this country. Love him or hate him, he is the president. And you can hate the man, but you've got to respect the institution. And what people like Panjikidze and Margvelashvili said about him, he can attend these events as a private citizen. I mean, that is ridiculous. The fact that on the Independence Day of this country, the most important national holiday, there is no significant place for the head of state, that is a shame. And
yes,
that is exactly just to irritate Misha. I have no opinion about a military parade or not, but it is shameful.
It is horrible that he is not given a place and was told to attend as a private citizen. However, considering that Misha lost the election, saying that there need to be tanks going down Rustavelli because that's an important part of Georgia flexing its independence.
I do not agree with that.
Well, that's why, you know, you're saying that they're annoyed because he's Misha. I'm saying perhaps they're annoyed because he's so excited about tanks.
Or they could have given him a parade of school children to review. In that case, some folk dancers.
Right, because exactly, there's certainly a tradition of that. First Deputy Director General of Channel First, Tomas Kamaladze, announced that there are changes planned for the channel's programming. According to him, Dato Paichadze may move his program to the radio. He also
said nobody happens to listen to.
Right, there's that. And Eka Kvesi Tadze will have one program instead of two per week. Kamaladze was appointed to the position of First Deputy Director General of Channel One last week. He also discussed the importance of the Georgian language and said that foreign songs should be restricted. I quote, "How many centuries should pass so the Georgian songs will be played on any channel in England? Will we ever get a chance of it? I don't think so. You know, Turkey is a big country, but you can't hear anyone singing in a foreign language in buses or public spaces. There are a lot of records being sold outside, so you can buy and listen to them at home as much as you want. Think about it. Which one is dominant, Georgian or foreign production? Sometimes it seems like you are in England or the USA and you don't live in Georgia anymore. We fall into decay. Recently, I was very intolerant with so many English words. For example, in Georgian, teenager means mozardi. There are lots of words like this. Training is not a Georgian word. Georgian language is facing the greatest danger. Is there any sense that we don't say it in the Georgian language? It's a very elastic language. No other language can be compared with it." End quote.
Well, he sounds like a reasonable man.
Well, but, you know, in some countries, you don't have to do it the French way, where you have it all regulated by law and quotas for everything. But in some countries, public broadcasters or some of the radio stations say, we have like a voluntary quota and we aim to play 20-30% like local bands or something like that. And that's if you have the back, like if you can like kind of...
What's this guy talking about though? When was the last time he was on a Marsh Rupert? I mean, for God's sake, the amount of really, really low quality Georgian pop that it produces is amazing. This country punches above its weight in terms of the rubbish pop music it produces. I mean, I would love to hear nothing but fantastic Georgian music, and I would also like to hear a smattering of English songs, but everywhere I go in public, I hear Georgian songs. It's not like it's in danger at all.
I would absolutely agree with that. And I would also say that, you know, coupled with his decisions to get rid of two of the most talented interviewers on television is unfortunate. When you look at, you know, people who are, you know, smart, educated, that ask good questions. And I mean, okay, fine. You could say that Kwesitadze and Dato are on, you know, are somewhat on one side. But they're certainly, I wouldn't call them biased. And they really are the two best interviewers around. And it's unfortunate that they're trying to get rid of
them. And I think they're one of the few programs that actually manage to set an agenda, political agenda, or like shape public debates. Well,
water cooler stuff.
Right. Yeah, but like exactly. The rest of the public broadcaster doesn't really manage to do that, so...
Yeah, that's not good. All right, we're against that, Badano Thomas. Although we love the Georgian language, because it's so rich and awesome, and Georgian music. Geostat published parliamentary figures about the annual growth of the
GDP. Preliminary, not parliamentary, but
right,
they were
exactly.
Maybe approved by Parliament.
That's what
knows.
I meant when I... Thank you. Probably preliminary figures about the annual growth rate of real GDP. For the first quarter of 2013, the number was 1.7. The first quarter of 2012, the figure was 6%.
And that's really, really low. I think that shows how since like middle of last year, businesses were really insecure about what was happening in terms of, you know, political stability. And so there was not much investments. Hardly any foreign investors came in. Businesses didn't really grow, and so we see almost stagnation in terms of economic growth, which is not a good sign. I mean, in the past years, we always had 6, 7, 8%.
Yeah, it would, you know, it's time for the government to, you know, get together the, you know, partnership fund, which is becoming a sovereign wealth fund, and, you know, get things moving along. I mean, the previous government, the Chinese style, they had a lot of ways to goose the economy. They don't want to do that anymore, supposedly, so great, but let's get moving. As of March 31st, Georgia owed $4.3 billion in foreign debt, $2.7 billion of which is owed to international institutions. The World Bank is the largest creditor with 38% of Georgia's foreign debt, totaling $1.6 billion. The IMF takes second place with 15%, totaling $650 million. The Asian Development Bank takes third place with 10%, totaling $418 million in loans to Georgia. These, by the way, are loans that have to be paid back, but they are quite low interest loans. ADB with 10% for $418 million. They got here pretty recently. That's a pretty quick uptick for them. The Economic Policy Research Center has released a report on the macroeconomic situation in Georgia. Here are some key facts. FDI inflows to Georgia fell significantly at the end of 2012. This figure is down 23% from 2011. There's a record high inflow of remittances totaling $1.3 million reported in 2012, which outpaced foreign direct investment inflows by 64%. Last Tuesday, Liberty Bank signed an agreement with the Security Service, which is a branch of the Ministry of Internal Affairs and is responsible for the security of government buildings, parks, libraries, and embassies. This sort of quasi-sub-branch, probably a LEPL, can be hired by private companies and individuals. Liberty Bank hired them to protect the bank's head office, branches, outlets, and cash collector cars for 5 million lari over a five-year period. Same day, Bank of Georgia announced that it too will have its security done by the Security Service, the group that currently collects and transports money for Bank of Georgia, protested in front of Bank of Georgia's head office. You know, this worries me in the way in which an entity associated with the Interior Ministry, you know, seems to be the people to hire by banks. This was exactly the same thing under the previous government.
These are the guys with the orange cars, right? The white orange cars that, like, drive around with the lights on when they have, like, some cash in the...
Well, but there's... there are private security companies as well, but these are different, and, they go around to banks and say, like, so, you have a private security company working for you. It would be a good idea if you were to hire us, you know, and...
Is that how it works?
Yes, that's how it works.
That's not very good, is it?
And it's just not so good. So, I somebody might want to think of some regulation about that. On Tuesday, the president of the National Bank of Georgia, Georgi Kadagidze, held a closed meeting with representatives of the Georgian commercial banks. After the meeting, he said that it's necessary to prevent advertisements which deceive consumers into taking out bad loans. He said that National Bank of Georgia may toughen their regulations to prevent distorted advertising. As of January 1st, Georgia's population was just under 4.5 million. This number is 0.3% less than in 2012. 53% of the population live in towns and cities, while 47% live in villages.
But this is not based on a census. This is based on calculations based on a really old census. So
yeah, which, and supposedly, as reported previously, there's going to be another census at some point soon.
Can we just engage in some wild speculation?
Certainly, that's what we do here.
So Bidzina made a statement early this week saying that he's not happy with the work of one of the ministers. And
One of you has betrayed me.
He said something like, unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to resolve the problem with one of the ministers. He previously named a few ministers who he said were doing a good job, Margaret Ashvili, Kaladze, and Alessandro, I think he mentioned. I think one more. So who's going to get the chop?
You heard anything?
I've heard a few things. I've heard that it might be agriculture. And yesterday, a few people were arrested from the Agriculture Ministry as well. Old guys, though. And I've also heard it might be Ministry of Economics, but that was just idle speculation in a Georgian newspaper. And I've also heard that it might be Finance, but that was also just idle speculation. So someone's getting the chop. And Usupashvili is a quite funny thing. He said that, as far as I'm concerned, they're all doing well, but I don't manage the government, the cabinet. It's not my decision. And also, regarding the Lopota Gorge thing, regarding the Chechen thing, we failed to mention that Usupashvili said that he would not have said it like that, and that he thinks that this is an example of the Prime Minister's inexperience. So we have Usupashvili, I wouldn't say distancing himself, but certainly being pretty independent of his boss's line.
As well he should be, since there are branches of government in the new Georgia. As of January 1st, Georgia's population was, as reported, 4.5 million. We'll not go into that anymore. Farmers in Kakheti demanding the suspension of land sales to foreigners are collecting signatures. They intend to collect 25,000 signatures, which they will submit to Parliament, which is a little weird since doesn't it take 30,000 signatures for a public initiative?
It does.
I'm not sure what they're going to do. Is this in Kakheti? Is not where the Sikhs are, right? The Sikhs are.
They're all around Snorri. Yeah,
I thought that. Punjabi's, oh, it's Snorri. Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Interesting.
I think this is becoming an increasingly hot topic.
Yeah, and it would be nice.
The government would need to kind of step forward and say what their agenda is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, do are foreigners allowed to own land by law or not? And is that going to change or whatever else?
Do they get to own land if they've got agricultural experience in 2.5 years of being
right? Right. Which was not government sponsored. We checked. I mean, that was just like an individual initiative.
Right. But if somebody legally acquires land and there's people who like basically threaten you and like don't allow you to enter the land you legally bought, I mean, is the government going to protect these people? Or yeah,
an important question. On March 5th, the company contracted to develop Gudiashvili Square, Irao Magnat Gudiashvili LLC, had its contract with the Tbilisi Development Fund abolished. The whole property is now under the control of the Tbilisi Development Fund, which might continue the rehabilitation project in the future, or might not. Nobody knows. Lermontov's house is gone, but the rest of the square remains, and the newly opened Pur, which is now upstairs instead of downstairs. This in from Sefia Karta's Twitter feed, which Tabilpod watches carefully. The number of Georgians with Abkhaz passports is now nearly 25,000. So you know.
Well, there's been protests in Abkhazia this week from the Abkhaz opposition, who say that the Georgians are getting passports too easily because they're sort of stacking the deck to vote for the current government. And so they would say that the Abkhaz opposition want it much more difficult for Georgians to acquire Abkhaz passports. But it's because you've got to have a...
Who's the opposition?
Oh, you know, Hajimba and those guys. So you have this rather hilarious situation where the Georgians protest that the Abkhaz government are giving Georgians in Abkhazia passports, and the Abkhaz opposition, who are much more radical than the Abkhaz government, are also protesting the Georgians getting passports in Abkhazia. But certainly, that's the only way for the Georgians to be integrated into Abkhaz society is to, you know, it's one of the ways to do it. But what is the future? Where does the future lie in Abkhazia for that? When you have 25,000 Georgians in the most productive agricultural territory of Abkhazia suddenly wielding political power there, that could be pretty interesting for Suchumi. So,
every day an adventure on the Nguti Bridge. On Tuesday, Georgian Railways announced a new passenger train, which will run from Tbilisi to Batumi. It consists of four cars manufactured in China specifically for Georgia. One-way ticket is 18 lari. Airzana will start regular flights between Odessa and Batumi beginning May 8th. Flights will go twice a week on Saturdays and Wednesdays. A one-way ticket starts from around 170 euros, while a round trip goes for just under 300 euros. On Sunday, the Orthodox Church celebrated Palm Sunday. Ilya II delivered the liturgy at Samepa Cathedral. Also on Sunday, the Georgian judo team beat Russia 4-1 in the finals of the Budapest European Team Championships. As you know, we follow any sporting event in which Georgia beats Russia closely here on Tabilpod.com. On May 31st, footballers from Milan will play against Energy Minister Kahi Kaladze and his friends in Dinamo Stadium. This will be a farewell game to Kaladze's football career. Kaladze stated that all the famous footballers with whom he played for 10 years, including Maldini, Shevchenko, Albertini, and Nesta, will all come to Georgia. Parliamentary news update. The Committee on Legal Issues intends to revise penalties and fines imposed on businesses for various financial infractions. The government is preparing legislative amendments. Parliament overcame Misha's veto on the law on regular courts, which will reform the High Council of Justice. The vote to override the veto is 91-26. The bill will be sent to the President for signature. If the President does not sign the bill within 7 days, the Parliamentary Chairman will sign the bill into law anyway. Also, Georgian Dream's parliamentary majority agreed not to override another vetoed bill, which was a controversial proposal that would have restricted a defendant's right to choosing between a jury, a trial by judge and jury, although they're working on different versions of that in committee, so they might pass one in sort of the parliament's own. Meme Watch this week. Jumpstart put a meme on the internet, an infographic which draws a direct demographic line between abortion and population growth. The infographic says, quote, "If not for abortion, the Georgian population would be at least 8% larger," end quote. The chosen graphics are a cute stork and a baby with a big X through it, all on a baby blue background, which is iconography clearly identified with one side of the abortion debate. Put the link of this graphic in the forum so that you can write them and let them know your thoughts. Geocapital number this week is 13%, which is Georgia's current account deficit according to 2011 IMF data. The current account combines net exports, which is exports minus imports, net investment income from abroad, and cash transfers from abroad. Armenia has a current account deficit of 11%. Turkey is at 10%. Russia has a current account surplus of 4%, while Azerbaijan has a current account surplus of more than 20% due to oil exports. The United States has a current account deficit of 3% compared to a deficit of 3.5% in the UK. Current account surpluses of 9.7% in Germany and the Netherlands, respectively. Look at the Netherlands being a bigger net exporter than Germany per GDP. Georgia's high current account deficit is mainly caused by high trade deficits. In the first 3 months of this year, for example, Georgian imports were almost three times as large as its exports. Our guests today are Alicia Wallace and Dhirishti Rajguru, a student at the Tbilisi State Medical University. I'm sorry, let's say that again.
Rajguru,
I apologize for that. At Tbilisi State Medical University. So, starting with Alicia, where were you born? Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about your grandparents.
Okay, I'm from Trinidad and Tobago, twin islands in the Caribbean, very close to Venezuela. Actually, I can see Venezuela from one end of Trinidad. We can see cars driving in Venezuela. And my grandfather is from Tobago, and the rest of my family is from Trinidad. And basically, it's a warm climate right through the year.
How long have you been here?
I'm here. This is my second year in Tbilisi. Yes.
All right. And Dhirishti?
Yes. I'm basically from West India. And after my... After
what part of West India? Is that Gujarati or where?
Gujarati, yes. Uh-huh. And... after I was born, I'm mostly traveling all over the India because my dad used to get transferred. So, my grandfather all used to stay in the same place, but my father took many transfers. So, I mostly traveled all parts of India, north, middle, east, and west, and
what
south.
What part's the Middle East?
Madhya Pradesh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And Maharashtra.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And how long have you been here in Georgia?
Me too. I'm the second year here.
Second year?
Yes.
All right. So what do you think you'll be doing in 10 years? You're medical students now. What's your best guess as to where you'll be and what you'll be doing?
Well, my aim actually is to be a forensic pathologist, which actually takes about 10 years of study. So in 10 years, hopefully, I'll be graduated and working back in Trinidad and Tobago.
And I think medical studies, as we all know, takes a lot of time to get settled. I think I'll go for neurophysician, and it will take more years than any other branches. So,
and where do you think you'll do your residency? I mean, is that going to be back home or?
Well, for me, there's no forensic pathology residency available in Trinidad. My aim is to actually go to the U.S., probably Baltimore or Boston or something.
I'm thinking in India only, or maybe I'll go to Australia for clinical research.
And why medicine? Why did you each study medicine?
For me, I wanted to be a forensic pathologist since age 14 because we had it's lacking in Trinidad and we needed more pathologists. So we actually had to bring in foreigners to work, and it's actually a field lacking all over the world. So to be a pathologist, you have to do medicine first.
And what does a forensic pathologist do?
They're the ones who checked cause of death. Mostly with crimes or drownings, sudden deaths, any unnatural causes of death, they check the cause of
and
death.
And is this for legal purposes or is
for
this for research? Or
legal purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in my case, I believe that I want to be close to human science, which is like behavior, health. Because for human beings, we consider happiness... First thing comes is, if you're healthy, you will be happy. So I believe to keep people healthy and help them in this.
Well, that sounds a little bit like public health as opposed to, you know, specific medicine. I mean, are you...
Yes, but I like how to study human behavior and basically brain, how it goes with our all reactions.
So you're interested in research, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how our brain works in that. That's for neurophysics.
How did you each first hear about the possibility of studying medicine in Georgia?
For me, there are 10 other Trinidadians here. And when I first heard of it, there were 15 here. And I got the flyer about this university from a friend of a friend of a girl who's here.
Uh-huh.
So I saw it, and at first I thought it was fake because I saw the cost of tuition, and I'm like, this isn't real because I was checking U.S. universities. And 1 year in U.S. university can pay for 5 years here. So that was basically the determining factor. And I spoke to other Trinidadians who were already here and Tobagonians who were already here. And they told me the situation, and that was when I decided.
Yeah, I came here through an agent who is in India. And first, I didn't thought of coming to Georgia. But compared to other countries like China and Ukraine, where medical universities are there, here we get 80% of internship, which in India, the MCI recognizes. And plus, it's cheaper than Indian private colleges to study. As I got a little bit lower marks for getting admission in the government schools in India, so I preferred coming here. And I have a few my own state people here, so I contacted them and found out about these things.
And you generally heard good things from the people that you contacted?
Actually, they told there are many chances after here. If you study, you can get other exams like USMLE, and those are more easy compared to when you study in India.
And so you mean there's an opportunity after Georgia to take exams that will give you certification. So Georgian certification is taken seriously in a lot of different places.
Medical education here is okay. But still, we get more opportunities than India because here lots of conferences are held in all Europe. Credit system is there in our university. So we can get more opportunities than in India.
And then did you look at any other places besides Georgia? Or
For me, mostly in the West. I looked at other Caribbean countries, also U.S. But as I said, the cheapest U.S. university could have paid for 5 years here.
Right.
And education in Trinidad and Tobago is free because we have oil, and tertiary education is free. But because it's free, it's very difficult to get into medical school because everyone has the same opportunity to get in.
Right.
So based on that, I heard of this and I tried to...
Yes, exactly. In India also, it's like that. We have more competition for medicine. Mm-hmm. So I got low marks, little bit low marks, but still I had no choice because I had to do medicine only.
Why did you have to do medicine?
Because I don't want to go lower than that.
Right. And so having lower marks, I mean, what are the admissions process for getting into Georgian universities? I mean, what did you have to do? You have to take some international exam, or did you apply directly? And is it based on grades, or how does it work?
No, there is no exam from India. We get directly through our high school certificates.
For us, we also have a consultant, an agent, and he's the person who decides. He's working with the school, and he decides if we are mature enough based on our grades and those who already have a first degree, because a lot of the Trinidadians here have a first degree already.
Uh-huh.
And he is the one who decides, and also because there's such a culture difference, he has to see if we may be academically qualified, but he has to see if we are physically, mentally, emotionally ready also to study here.
And what is the tuition per semester, per year that you're paying here?
Per year, it's about $3,000. But it varies every year. It increases for the new, the first student.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then what about the status at home? I mean, when you go home and apply for jobs and you say that you've studied at Medical University in Georgia, what do people think about that?
Well, our country people may think that the person is coming from foreign and studied in foreign country, but we have to pass an entrance exam in our country for practicing medicine in India.
Okay, so you have an exam,
yes,
that everybody has to pass anyway, and so it's like if you're an international doctor, they don't really care whether that's international Georgia or international Ireland or America or whatever.
In Trinidad, we have to do first step of USMLE before we can work.
The first step of what?
USMLE exam.
What is that?
The United States
medical
exam.
Uh-huh.
License exam.
Uh-huh.
And this is, in America, they also have to do this before they work. So all the graduates of TSMU right now are working in Trinidad. They have jobs.
Uh-huh. Yes. And if you had not gone to medical school in Georgia, what would you have ended up doing? Would you have gone to another country? Would you have stayed at home? Or what would have happened?
I would have done forensic toxicology or a master's in forensic toxicology or forensic biology, because I already have a first degree in biology, biochemistry, and chemistry. So
I would have done physiotherapy. I like this physiotherapy department. They are cool, rehabilitation, and
where?
All is very necessary. In India, mostly.
Uh-huh.
Because we have a very large, department and lot of money in that also, in uh-huh. India.
How's your training at the university? Like, is it... Did you have different expectations, or the expectations were, like...
Well,
with what you see now?
For me, because the Trinidadians who are here right now, they are all in fourth year. And TSMU, actually, every year they're improving their skills. So actually, what I received here was more than I was expecting, based on others' experience. Mm. And also, the Trinidadians who were here before, who graduated, they were here during the time of the war also. So they saw Georgia improve and also TSMU improve. So a lot of things are happening in the school. They're always revising their curriculum, their program, to improve based on other... They have some U.S. advice, some European advice, and they're always trying to improve. So for me, it's okay.
I think here most of the international students are Indians, mm-hmm. especially in my batch. And I'm not very happy to see Indian faces over here.
Why?
No, so many. It feels like I'm in India only. And sometimes it becomes annoying because Georgians are, not very happy with so many foreigners over here.
Well, that I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, so what is that like being a foreigner, here? Georgia has been...
With a different skin color, maybe.
Yeah,
that stands out more than...
Exactly. I mean, so is
2 meter Texan.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so is that? I mean, is that difficult? Has it been complicated?
For me, I've had both extremes. I've had people who are really, really nice. They see, and if they hear you can speak some Georgian, they get excited and they're extra helpful and give you extra stuff and want to invite you. And then there's the other extreme. I think mostly the guys who are around 20s, this age group, the guys mostly, they have this negative, especially as a black girl, because I don't know, they think we're prostitutes or something, but how they approach you, it's very shocking. I've gotten hit on the streets as well, but also, on the other extreme, people are helping you, people are giving you extra stuff in the market when you go to buy stuff, so it's both sides. And also because of the movies and the rap, for example, they think it's okay to call black people by other names, and I'm
you
can't use this, and they keep using it, but at the end of the day, once they don't touch me, and because also I have dreadlocks, so you're walking in the streets and people, strangers, are randomly coming and touching your hair. And I don't understand this. I know it's strange for them, but still, I mean, we have a lot of foreigners in Trinidad too, but we would never come up and randomly touch someone,
Mm.
But
I've noticed here that Georgians are more welcoming here. But there are some of my friends have faced difficult situations regarding... hitting and some crime and all those things. But, I have not experienced anything bad over here. I'm all cool here. Friends also, very good friends, Georgian friends, and we exchange a lot of things. We often go to each other's places and have food and enjoy. And for me, it's okay. I mean, but I know that my friends have gone through some, really bad accidents with Georgian people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, fights or crime or
it's like both.
Mm-hmm.
Fight, and it was really fight, like stabbing and all those things.
Oh wow!
Yes, it was really bad.
I think also the for a foreigner here, I think the biggest challenge is when it comes to looking for an apartment. Because yes, a lot yes. of the landlords, they take advantage of you. One, the cost of the rent is so much more as a foreigner. But also when it comes to repairing certain things in the apartment, they don't want to fix it. They are shouting at you. They are screaming. And it's very difficult. And
well, I can assure you that goes for all landlords. That's not just in your circumstances.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, but the prices that foreigners pay are still significantly more than what a Georgian would pay.
No, but year by year, it's getting very difficult to get flats if you want to stay on rent.
It's getting more expensive?
It's getting expensive and you get less flats.
Yes.
Because there is population is increasing and Georgian people don't want to rent it to foreigners.
And the first question they would ask is, where are you from? And then they said, no, it's not available anymore. Once they hear it's from some country they don't know or from India, or if they see a different skin color, a lot of them say no.
And so if you were giving advice to somebody who was coming in a few months from where you're from, what would you say to them in terms of their assessment as to whether they should come and what, you know, I mean, in terms sociologically, in terms of dealing with Georgia and you know, what they should be ready for?
If an Indian is coming here, I would advise that person to show what the real background they are having in a sophisticated way, okay? And don't make a bad impression on Georgian people, because if you get something in wrong activities, you can't live here. And you have to just concentrate in your studies, do well, and attend, don't miss any opportunities. Because our universities, they give, you know, professors are very, you know, good.
Yes.
And we can, you know, they are very helping. And in India, if you see, professors don't interact with students so much. They will just give lectures and move away. And conferences and all the students don't get to participate in those conferences. But here we get chances.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't lose these things. And they have to look after it.
This is also what I want to say. This studies here, the school style, it's more student-oriented. So you would find a lot of professors, a lot of teachers meeting you outside of lectures to help you. If you don't understand, they will tell you it over and over to make sure you understand. But also, I think the people, Georgian people, they are becoming more welcoming every year for foreigners. So I think it's okay that if someone comes, because at the end of the day, what's important is, if you really want to do medicine, of course, you will have the good with it and the bad. And I think it's, when you wait, it's okay to come here. And they're improving all the time. So I would recommend that they come here and just ignore the people on the street, but focus, as Drishti said, on your studies, and everything will be okay.
And let's just say, hypothetically, that you were advising the Ministry of Education of Georgia on how they can help young people, students, high school students, in understanding that there are people from that look different, that speak different languages from around the world. What advice would you give to the Ministry of Education on setting up a curriculum about diversity and acceptance and those sorts of things?
Actually, I think so far they're doing a good job, because I think the younger people they would see on the street, they will always come because they're learning English in school. They would always come, hello, how are you? They're really nice. What I said, the problem, the age group, that is the problem, I think, are the guys, the men who are in this 19 to probably 25 age group. This age group. So I don't know how they would target this age group, because they have already left school. But the high school students and the primary school students, they are all very welcoming.
And these Birsevikebi guys that are hanging around on the streets, what would you tell them if you had the chance to sort of speak to them as a group in a large auditorium?
I mean, when they say things, I tell them in Georgian, obviously, I will tell them that, you know, it's not nice or whatever. But they know it's not nice. I don't know how they can change.
They intentionally do it.
It's not that they don't know what they're doing. They intentionally do it. So it's almost like whatever you say.
The Georgian men are very aggressive.
Yeah.
Yes. They want to just show their aggression in some way.
Yes. And I think even towards each other, some of them are aggressive. So I don't think anything that other people say. I think if you tell them not to do it, they would do it more. Because it's exciting.
I think there should be more security for foreigners.
Yes.
There should be some law against any actions for foreigners. Okay.
Interesting.
Yes, because even...
More and more we are not feeling safe over here. Mm. In night we can't, after 9 o'clock, I am not afraid, but still, for sake of safety, I prefer not going out on the street.
What are the things when you came here that surprised you that you liked a lot? The little things in Georgia that you just, you
the
know,
really... The mountains
here
are really beautiful. I like the beauty of Georgia. It's very nice.
Yes, Georgia is very beautiful. The mountains actually remind me of home because we have a lot of, you know, mountains we can see. They remind me of home, but what I love so much about Georgia is the architecture. The buildings itself, and my brother, he's doing civil engineering, and every time I'm sending him pictures and he's like, he wants to come, you know. I love the architecture, the designs, the creativity of the buildings, and also the flowers. They plant a lot of flowers, especially when it's coming into spring. They plant a lot of flowers everywhere you go, and it adds color, because, you know, I come from Caribbean where everything is about color. And when you come here, I think for us, we were seeing everybody's wearing either grays or blacks. So it was depressing.
In winters, it's very...
So when we see the colors, it's like vibrant and stuff. I really like Georgia in the night, especially. It's really beautiful. Very beautiful.
Excellent. Alicia and Didishi, thank you very, very much. We appreciate you coming on the show. Very interesting to hear. This week's English language movies at the Roosevelt Theater across from Parliament are Saturday, May 4th, The Croods at 6 p.m. Tickets are 10 Lottie and 50 Tetri. The Colga movies this week, tomorrow and Friday, is Sex and Philosophy from 2005. Monday, May 6th, is Arbitrage from 2012. Wednesday, May 8th, is Rebel Without a Cause from 1955. All movies start at 6 p.m. at Dom Kino. I think that should be 8 p.m., but I'm not sure. Anyway, look up Colga on Facebook and figure it out. It's across from Roosevelt Metro and McDonald's. Tickets are 7 lari. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email address is tbilpod@gmail.com. Or post to the forum on our website, tbilpod.com. This week, we will wind up with, from 1966... The Capitals and Cool Jerk.
Now give me a little bit of bass with those 88s.